He's got this dream about buying some land. He's gonna give up the booze and the one night stands, and then he'll settle down in some quiet little town and forget about everything. But you know he'll always keep moving. You know he's never gonna stop moving, 'cause he's rolling, he's the rolling stone. When you wake up, it's a new morning. The sun is shining, it's a new morning.
You're listening to the best of Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. To talk with Art Bell, call the wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
I liked his answer, actually. Why would you own a missile? Why would you buy a missile silo? Well, because it's cool. Now, you see, I can understand that answer, because it's cool. Indeed, owning a missile silo would be cool. Bob Lazar owns one, and he's pretty cool, and he'll be right back. Once again, Bob Lazar. Bob, you said you could describe some things that, what, you can't do, or you might
do? Well, one
do,
thing
or?
I do have to correct is my partner John Ferrat and I are involved in the silo, and John has far more invested in it than I do. So just to say that it's mine personally,
so you have
is not
part of a silo.
I guess in a respect.
I mean, but did you? There's it had to be more. Well, maybe there didn't. I you know, I was going to actually put a rocket on my front lawn to impress my neighbors. I thought it'd be cool. I mean, if you're a neighbor and you see a rocket go up in a guy's lawn. Huh. So do you own a silo for the same reason? Well, you said it's cool. It is
well,
cool.
Well, no, we actually have some serious plans for it.
I thought you might.
And, you know, you don't invest all kinds of money just for the hell of it. But it's amazing the amount of rumors that start. And generally, for some reason, when my name's involved somewhere, all kinds of ridiculous stories pop out of the woodwork. But I think even Channel 8 carried that story in Las Vegas there. And, in fact, when I was down at the silo, we got a call from the police in Roswell.
Oh.
And they sounded kind of embarrassed and said, you know, we're going to have to come down and check out the facility there. And we asked why, and there was kind of a hesitation, and they said, I know this sounds crazy, but, you know, we have people that actually have come down to the station and said that they believe you're holding alien hostages underground in
the
silo.
Oh.
Yeah, and, you know, because they filed the report, they actually went down. They're obligated to go check things out, so they had to come down and verify that there's no aliens being held hostage in there.
They actually did that?
Yeah, they did that while I was there. And
a story in itself. That got reported. I missed that one.
Well, that was most recently. Before I moved to New Mexico, what had happened was a random guy drove out there and was planning on committing suicide. Now, of all the places in the world this guy could have gone to kill himself, he drove down the road to the silo, parked on top of it, and set his car on fire or something like that. Okay. Anyway, the thing burnt to the ground, and the guy was dead. And prior to that, there's also wild animals, antelope, cattle, whatever in the area, and there's been a couple dead cows out there. So the connection between cattle mutilations and all this stuff started brewing in the minds of some people. So somehow it got around that I was developing a death ray in this underground facility, and that I had tested it on cattle, which is why they were dead. And, of course, a guy came driving down the road, and I vaporized his car and killed him.
I anyway, see. And, none, and you maintain that none of this is true.
No, of course not.
All right.
But it's just amazing, the stories that get started.
Well, of course, you are Bob Lazar. There is a certain aura around you. And when you connect that with buying a missile silo, people's imaginations naturally go berserk.
Well, berserk is a good word.
But then again, you are Bob Lazar. It is a missile silo. And to be honest, you haven't actually answered my question yet about what you're going to do with it. And you say you can't answer that question. And you know that's going to feed rumors. It's got me thinking. Okay, well, all right.
Well, I just can't help that.
Yeah, Bob, over the years, especially in that time period when you were with John and the whole thing was coming down, how much, and you've done a number of public interviews, several with me, how much is left that you can't talk about?
Can't,
or unable to.
Concerning the UFO
the whole thing, yeah.
Information.
Yeah.
Not a whole lot.
But some.
There's just a couple little tidbits, and I think I've told you that before. There's a couple things that I need, and this isn't to burn anybody and hold information back, but it's in case somebody claims that they were involved with the project or work there. There are a couple things that only those people will know, and any time that anybody brings those up when questioned by me, I'll know.
Right.
So that's the only reason. There's just a few little bits and pieces of information here and there.
All righty. Then let's go down that road for a second. I mean, there are others like you, Bob, who worked out in and saw all of that. Obviously, there had to be quite a number over the years of people who became aware of that knowledge. Why are there not a lot more Bob Lazars out there?
I don't know. Initially, I was not supposed to be the only one that came forward. But
not supposed to be?
No.
You mean you had an agreement with someone?
Well, Barry, the guy that I worked with there, was supposed to additionally come forward, but that apparently never happened. So I was left out there in the dark.
Twisting in the breeze.
Mm-hmm. So Barry, I don't know what happened.
So this Barry had promised you he would step forward with you?
Well, kind of, and, you know, I wonder if it's wise, really, to comment too much on that, because
mm-hmm.
I don't know what Barry's situation is now, but mm-hmm. we had talked about things.
But if somebody were to come forward and claim they had seen what you saw, they also know it to be true because they worked there, you would have a couple of questions you'd be able to ask them that would verify the authenticity.
Oh, sure. Instantaneously.
Instantaneously.
Yeah.
All right. Now, why did you move? I mean, you've been a very long time desert rat out here in the Las Vegas area nearby me and, of course, the infamous Area 51 S4 and all the rest. I mean, you lived here so long. Why'd you move?
You know, after a while, Las Vegas gets to you. I was there and certainly working at the test site was fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And a little bit of the work I did there when I initially moved to Las Vegas. But after that, being out of the scientific field, I really went stagnant and really didn't produce or do anything that I really considered worthwhile and just needed to get out of the Las Vegas environment completely. And New Mexico, especially around the Albuquerque area, you know, you have two of the most prominent national nuclear labs here, Los Alamos and Sandia, and, you know, the cities here are filled with PhD scientists, and it felt good to get back into the mainstream of things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in the short time I was here, in the first 18 months, I just began to actually produce what I considered decent work. I started filing for patents and As you know, working on the hydrogen system and
I want to talk a little bit about that, as a matter of fact. Yeah, patents and on hydrogen fuel systems, and I know you've had them in your car. You've run your car on hydrogen, did it for a long time, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Whatever patents you have, what's this about a SWAT team coming in and grabbing all of your data and computers?
I have to stop you there. We can't even touch that one. I spoke to my attorney after I sent that email.
No kidding.
No, we got to totally just
not talk about that, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. At any rate, now that you're back or you're in New Mexico, you feel like you're doing good work in your area once again.
Yeah, and it's I guess it's just a different mindset, and also the immediate area that I live in. You know, moving up isolated in the mountains in the middle of a forest and, you know, on a lot of acres of land and is different than living right in the middle of Las Vegas in a, you know, typically in town. So it's just, it's a freer environment and I'm building my own research lab here and I don't know, it's a lot more fertile ground for thinking and actually doing something serious.
Well, I do get the sense there is still an awful lot you can't talk about. You said a couple of things, but then we keep touching on several things that still there's aspects of it that you can't talk about. So I would say a lot of your life still is surrounded by having to keep secrets. Are you good at keeping secrets?
No, I think it's been proven pretty well that I can't do that. But it drives me crazy because the thing I would love, I could spend 4 hours on the phone, more pissed off than you can imagine talking about the SWAT team thing, but my hands are tied right now.
And oh, no.
Maybe in the future I can say something about that. But
no, attorneys are that way. I know when there's ongoing stuff. And they're right, of course. Ultimately, they're right. But it does kill you not to be able to talk about something.
Yes, it does.
Uh-huh. Do you think that you're working on, without asking you specifically what you're working on, did any of your experience at S4N, what you saw and what you learned technically, have application in any work that you're either doing now or contemplating?
Yes.
Yes. Now, I'm obligated to ask you about your project, what you envision, what you're doing, even in general terms. Can you tell me a little bit about what you're working on?
Well, I'm overburdened with projects in progress.
Mm.
As you mentioned, the hydrogen fuel systems, that's actually something I've been working on since the late 70s. And that's finally come to fruition, and a lot of the materials needed long-term testing, and they've certainly had it now.
Yeah.
That's probably the biggest.
Okay, perhaps you can answer a hydrogen question for me. Now, hydrogen is being touted. Even the President of the United States is touting it as the way to go. But there are others, Bob, who say, look, this is, in a way, all foolishness because, you know, to create hydrogen in amounts that would be good for the public to use, you know, energy cells, fuel cells, would require manufacturing, pollution, the use of energy. In other words, all you're really doing is finding a new storage facility and way to store energy that still has to be produced, frankly, in the old-fashioned way.
No, not really.
Well, then lay it on me. Not really how?
Well, first of all, there's two trains of thought here. The automotive industry, the president and his advisors are all going down the fuel cell path. And for those that don't know, a fuel cell is a device that takes gaseous hydrogen and oxygen, combines them, and makes electricity. And little fuel cell water dribbles out of it, because when the hydrogen and oxygen combine,
the only byproduct is water.
Right.
And so you could use these in cars or to power homes or whatever, right?
Right. Well, you can use these things, and their car of the future has fuel cells and an electric motor, And that's how the car is powered. Now, that's very efficient. It's around 35% efficient.
Okay.
Overall. And that is pretty neat. However, all the technology's not there. The vehicles will be fantastically expensive. None really exist right now in production. Hmm. And what about the billion cars that are on the road now? What, is everybody going to dish out $175,000 for a new car? And on top of that, they want to just replace gasoline pumps with hydrogen pumps and sell you the fuel again.
All right. Let's get back to refuting this. In other words, no matter how it works, Bob, and it sounds like you're almost more on the negative than the positive side of this, but, I mean, no matter how it works, aren't conventional fuels going to have to be used in copious amounts to produce these cylinders of hydrogen?
No, I don't.
How do you
figure?
The system
that I came up with, first of all, converts a conventional car to burn hydrogen conventionally.
And
no fuels.
With how much cost?
Well, let me get to that in a second.
All right.
The actual conversion is not that difficult, not that terribly expensive. I have not used any energy producing any of the hydrogen that I make as far as power off the grid, fossil fuels, or whatnot. Hydrogen is easily electrolyzed by water. You know, if you need to prove it to yourself, take a 12-volt battery, put both wires in the water, add a pinch of salt, and you'll see bubbles coming off of one side. Well, some off the other, too.
That's and that would be hydrogen.
Right. Anyway, it's easily produced, and it can be produced with solar panels or a wind turbine. I use solar panels. That's where all my hydrogen comes from. I fill up the Corvette with it, and we drive 700 miles on it. And the car will also run on gasoline.
All right. So that's perfected. I mean, it works, right?
Right, and it's worked for years and years and years.
All right. Let's say I buy a conventional automobile for, I don't know, 20, 30 grand, something like that. What would it cost to convert a car like that to hydrogen?
The big hang-up right now has been the actual storage medium. You don't want to store hydrogen as just a compressed gas because it's dangerous, it's flammable, and on top of that, you need thousands of times more space to hold the hydrogen than you would an equivalent amount of gasoline.
Okay.
So it just doesn't work.
Right.
You don't want to store it liquid because that's cryogenic, it's dangerous, it's just a big thermos bottle in your tank, and it's another big headache. The third way is the best way, and that's a metal hydride. And this is a granular material that absorbs hydrogen like a sponge absorbs water.
Mm-hmm.
And it only releases the hydrogen when it's heated. And when it's not being heated, I can fire incendiary bullets through the hydride tank, and it just smolders like a cigarette. So it's extremely safe.
Wow.
And this is the material that I store the hydrogen in the vehicles and for home use.
Is this the subject of a patent?
Yes.
It is.
Yeah. Now, there are various hydride materials, and some were actually very difficult to get a hold of because some of them, like lithium-6-deuteride, which is a hydride, actually, well, the material I use is a hydride, the only use for that material is in thermonuclear bombs, and it's restricted, obviously restricted for sale.
Yes.
And the only reason some of these hydrides are manufactured was for the weapons industry, and they're done so in such small quantities, the cost was very high.
Hmm.
For instance, to convert the Corvette just for the tanks of hydride, we were looking at $15,000 without the hydrogen conversion itself. So this is, you know, that's a pretty large price tag.
Out of line right now.
Right.
But if this whole thing were perfected and you had access to the materials and it were done in mass, I'd like to get some idea of what it would cost to convert.
Well, we've been working with the hydride manufacturers, and they promise a 70% reduction in cost in volume production. So,
does that make it viable?
Very much so. I mean, wouldn't you pay between $4,500 and $6,000 to have your car converted? You'll have your hydrogen generator at home, so you can drive locally and even up to 700 miles away on hydrogen. And if you want, you can always put gas in the tank, and the car will switch over to gasoline when necessary.
Okay, I've always wanted to know. Would I need to do that? Would hydrogen give me the same equal amount of horsepower? Would I be happy with a hydrogen fuel?
You get a little less, you know, for instance, in a larger engine. In fact, that's the reason we converted the Corvette, was a lot of these alternate fuel cars, you see little Ford Escorts and these little tiny motors, and it leaves everybody wondering, well, can't you power something substantial?
Mm-hmm.
So we purposely did a large V8 engine. And, yeah, it still lights up the tires and, you know, screams away. There's a little loss in horsepower, but in a large engine, you're not going to detect a 10% loss in horsepower.
But you're still having a lot of fun, though. I mean, it's enough horsepower that generally most people are going to be happy campers.
Oh, sure, and most people are willing to pay that price tag if they never, ever have to go to a gas station again. And who wouldn't? On top of that, you're not supporting, you know, the oil cartel.
That's right.
Or anything else that's going on or polluting the air.
All right, I'll hold it right there. Bob has a Corvette converted to hydrogen, and he's had that for a long time, and I guess the rest of the world is yet to come. We'll continue to talk with Bob Lazar, who knows lots of things. We'll see what we can pry from him as the hours continue. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell.
This is an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Bet on it. We'll get to questions from all of you for Bob Lazar coming up in the next hour. Listen, check out my webcam. By popular demand, I did put up a picture of the Tester model. I'm holding the Tester model for you in case you've never seen it. There it is. That's Bob's accurate recollection of what he saw at Area S4. And I'm holding in my hands. That's on my webcam. Top left-hand side of the coasttocoastam.com website. By the way, there may be, in fact, we know there are other Bob Lazars out there. And if there are, I'd like to encourage you to contact me. We'll work it out. Trust me, a lot of people get a little older now, and perhaps they'd like to talk about the things they saw up there. If you would, email me. My email address is artbell@mindspring.com. That's Art Bell, ArtBell. At mindspring.com. So if you're another Bob Lazar out there and you figure the time is right for you and you want to tell your story, I'm your guy. That's the way to get me. ArtBell@mindspring.com. Bob Lazar. We'll be right back. And And by the way, it's probably going to screw up my little scenario pleading for some more Bob Lazars to come forward. But out of curiosity, Bob, tonight all across the world, people who have been involved up at Area 51, S4, have seen what you have seen. These people, they're probably listening, Bob. A lot of them are listening. You can be sure of it, actually. And so what would you say to these people? Would you say, you know what, Art's right. Why don't you go ahead and email them, and why don't you come on and tell what you know? Would you advise them to do that?
No.
I knew you'd screw it up.
Don't tell anybody what you know. Just take my word for it.
I knew you'd do that. I knew it.
Yeah, well, that really is my message. Just forget it.
Forget it, huh?
Yeah, just forget it. Don't bother saying anything. It's not worth the hassle.
It's not worth it.
It's not. And for the most part, nobody's going to believe what you have to say anyway, so don't even think of doing it.
Oh, thanks for the help.
I'm sorry, but you asked.
Yeah, and I knew, I guess, what I was in for. Okay, well, I know, but still, all right, but let me take the other side of it, Bob. Let's fight this a little bit. There's a lot of people out there, like Stephen Greer, who I'll have on tomorrow night, and they really do make a compelling, damn strong case that, gosh, darn it all, if we've been visited by aliens, if they've really been here, if we have their craft, their technology, and even bodies, and this is such an incredibly large story, so important to the human race, that nobody has a right to keep anything like this secret, and it should be told, it should be out in the open, and if these Bob Lazars don't come in and talk to me and others, then how in the hell are we ever going to find out? Because you said it yourself, the government sure isn't going to tell us.
Yeah, and I agree with that completely.
Well, then how can you say that?
Well, from personal experience.
Yeah, in other words, you're not really a crusader at all, are you?
No.
You're not?
No. I'm not involved in UFO research. I don't follow the stories. I don't do lectures. I don't...
I know you don't.
You know, I don't do any of that stuff. You know, I try and put it behind me, you know, and a lot of people really... you know, have the drive to get this stuff uncovered, but generally those are the people that haven't been involved with anything. And, you know, sticking your neck out on the line really does change your life forever, and it's not a positive thing. You know, people really get the wrong impression. They think that, you know, this is a big boost in some way to you, and it's not by any stretch of the imagination. So, why would I recommend somebody do that?
Well, a lot of people, Bob, think that, when they have these reality TV shows and people line up for blocks and wait 2 days through the ice and the cold to get a chance to be, you know, have FaceTime on television, we do live in that kind of world, and so some people suspect your motive is that, but...
But I hate being on TV. I hate doing interviews, and I don't do lectures and all that. How could that possibly be my motivation?
Yeah, that's right. Well, I believe me, I do understand. Do you have any knowledge? Diane up in Washington wants to know. I get a computer message every now and then, a lot of them, actually. Do you have any knowledge, it's a good question, of any agreement between any group of aliens and humans or the U.S. government? Do you... believe that to be true or know it to be true, that there is some understanding?
I've heard rumors of that from various sources, but I don't have any first-hand knowledge of an actual agreement that was cut between anybody.
There's a lot of speculation, of course, about an agreement to allow some human beings, for example, to be abducted, you know, for research in return for... let's say, technology, and John Lear alluded to all that and said that they, in essence, reneged on that aspect of what was supposed to be a deal. Of course, you'd never make that kind of thing public. If you had made a deal to shuffle off some of your citizens at random to guys who are going to do God knows what to them, chop them up, cut them up, whatever they do, you could never talk about that ever.
I don't know. I find that kind of hard to believe.
So then John has gone too far for you. Is that right?
I'm sure he's listening.
Yeah, I'm sure he's listening.
That John knows he's gone too far for me. John's convinced that there are people living on, or some sort of beings living on Venus and some other local planets.
That's right. And
that drives me crazy.
Does it?
It absolutely does. And a bunch of the things he says.
Well, he's convinced there are artifacts on the moon, gigantic artifacts on the moon and Mars. And others have said that as well. Richard C. Hoagland and others have said there are things on the moon. In fact, you know what? There's a speculation that the President of the United States, George Bush, is about to make a speech in which he's going to say the United States is going to go back to the moon. There's going to be a shuttle mission to go back to the moon.
I heard that.
Yeah.
I heard he's supposed to make some sort of announcement.
And we would do it presumably with a shuttle, which is really, really interesting.
How are you going to get the shuttle?
Don't ask me. I have no idea, but that's what I'm hearing. And actually, I've heard Mr. Hoagland say it's possible. I mean, if they used every, in other words, once, I think Richard has said, or someone said, once you get into orbit, you're halfway to anywhere.
Well, sure. But if you want to actually get on the moon, it's a different story. You know, the orbiter wasn't designed to do that at all. And, in fact, it needs to be replaced with something else.
Yeah, it's getting pretty old.
Yeah.
Still, that's apparently what's going to be announced. I could turn out to be wrong, but I don't know of any other spacecraft that we have in current production that would get us to the moon. Do you?
No, but, we do still have a Saturn V sitting there.
A Saturn V could do it.
It was designed to do it with the lunar module and everything. It's sitting there in Florida, dust the thing off and launch it because they stopped the program right, you know.
You think it'd be all right? Not like old ammunition? I mean, it's pretty old now.
Well, you know, for the most part, you know, it's metal and components. Just sit there with something you know that works. Mm. Don't do what the United States typically does and reinvent the wheel constantly. Mm. That got us to the moon many times. It worked. Just update it with some modern materials, electronics, and components, and use it since it's there. And stop spending huge amounts of money doing nothing.
What can you imagine our motivation would be for going back to the moon? I mean, we did go, most people believe. I don't think we even went, but I believe we went, and we got rocks, and we didn't get very many surprises. And so what could we do on the moon today that we didn't do then?
That always seemed more sensible to me to make a small moon base as opposed to a space station.
Oh, really? Why?
Well, for various reasons. First of all, the space station is limited in what it can do, and I know a moon base is much more difficult to get to. It doesn't have to be large, but you can at least try and test out some technology on trying to manufacture fuel, do some small refining, see what you can get from the surrounding environment. You know, there have been reports, I think, was it the Cassini? Some radar mapping craft over the past 4 or 5 years detected that there were supposed large frozen areas of water.
That's correct.
On
yes.
the moon.
Right.
However, they just went over that data again and another orbiter now are refuting some of that. So,
yeah.
If you've got water, you've got energy, and you've got the possibility for all kinds of stuff. But
so we're back to a foggy area. There may not be enough water there to manufacture fuel, which would be a necessity.
Right.
So.
Right.
That would make it uninhabitable if they're completely reversing themselves now. It's kind of strange to me. A lot of people believe, Bob, that there are things on the moon, large glass structures, incredible things that were hidden from the world when we went to the moon and have been hidden ever since. And that's the reason they say we haven't gone back. I believe John is one of the people who believes that.
Yeah, he is. I'm not one of the people that believes that.
You are not?
No, absolutely not.
Then why go back, Bob?
Exploration. You know, why go to the top of the mountain? You know, it's a completely different world now than it was in the 60s. There's a lot more technology, so there's a lot more we can investigate there. And, you know, and the original reason to go to the moon was never to research the moon, you know, aside from beating the Russians there. The original intention was only to see the feasibility or to investigate the feasibility of making a small base there and launching a Mars mission from the moon. This was all about going to Mars. The moon was only supposed to be because it would be easier to get there from the moon, less gravity, so on and so forth.
Sure.
And that was just to be looked upon as a potential launching site for a Mars mission. So the interest was never in the moon. I mean, we pretty much knew it was just a rock up there anyway. The interest is, has always been in Mars, but Mars isn't that easy to get to.
Unless you had a moon base, and that would help.
Well, yeah, that would help. It's a shortcut, and you could store fuel there. There would be, if plans had gone how they should have, maybe we would have already been to Mars. But I think that's the frontier we should look at, is investigating that, or go to Europa. There's plenty of things in our immediate solar system that are, potentially fascinating, and Europa has probably the best chance of life, in our solar system. And even the hardcore skeptics at NASA pretty much agree there's a good chance there's something in the oceans there. So,
but Bob, if we've got technology that can manipulate gravity, and damn, it was back in the early 90s when you knew that we had that. Here we are launching, whether it's a Saturn V or a shuttle or however we get back to limp back to the moon, and for what reason I'm not sure about, but whatever. We're using ancient buggy-like technology compared to what you know exists now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't care what spacecraft they've come up with. In my eyes, they still look like fireworks. And they've proven themselves to be that on occasion.
Yes.
But it is. It's archaic technology, and we do have something that operates differently. However, it has limited fuel, a limited lifespan, and we don't want to lose it. So as far as I knew at the time, we couldn't even come close to duplicating even the most basic parts of the device. So what are you left with? You're left with your own archaic method of transportation to other planets, and you can only investigate what's going on around you.
So
and
then,
we're
Bob,
stuck.
We have been unable to decipher the manner in which, or duplicate the manner in which, gravity is manipulated by the devices on the craft that you saw. Obviously, we've failed, or what? In other words, otherwise we'd be using this technology, so we failed?
Well, quite possibly. Now, again, I hesitate because I'm talking about my knowledge from the early 90s and late 80s. Uh-huh. I don't know what's happened up till today. But as far as I knew back then, yeah, we've failed. That's the bottom line. We're not going to be duplicating that.
Do you think these craft, when tested, were taken outside the Earth's atmosphere?
No.
You do not?
No, I know that for a fact.
For a fact?
Yeah. I don't. Well.
Well. Why?
I just.
No, go ahead. Just whisper it in my ear.
Yeah, I pretty much know that for a fact.
Why, out of curiosity?
This is what we're getting right, real close to one of the areas that I said that I purposely don't talk about, so I know if anybody's been involved with a project, which has to do with the craft and where it's gone.
Oh.
So that this is why you're hearing my hesitation on this.
Okay, well, the next thing out of my mouth was going to be, why do you think, if we thought, or we had...
Well, this is a very valuable article, and it's an operating craft. I don't know if the other crafts were operating. We know this one does. There's only one of them. One of a kind of thing. Would you risk taking this out of... of the Earth's gravitational pull and losing it in space?
Yeah,
no.
It's a very good point.
This is their prized possession.
And
no
you
one.
Believe we still have that safely wherever. By the way, do you think it's still up there, or do you think it's been moved, and if so, where do you suppose?
I don't know. I always thought that was an odd place to put it, because in the early days of the nuclear weapon development, some of the best places that they kept everything were in the South Pacific, like Kwajalein Island and things of that sort. And
it's a good point.
You know, you don't have any looky-loos there. You have no hassles from anybody. You're in the middle of nowhere, and nobody can get there without you seeing them.
What a tremendous point.
And that's where I would have put it. I wouldn't have built this secret base in the middle of Nevada, you know, outside of Las Vegas. And the only reason they moved the nuclear test site to Nevada was because it was just too expensive running supplies back and forth and all the personnel to the South Pacific. Well, you don't have that problem with the ET program because it's limited personnel, limited supplies, and, you know, go hide it in the middle of the ocean on an island like they did with everything else. So if I was going to put it somewhere, that's where it would be.
Why do you think instead it ended up here in Nevada?
I don't know.
Huh. I mean, because obviously there are going to be more people conceivably seeing what's going on.
There's got to be a reason. Somebody must have, you know.
I mean, Bob, they still drive up to the mailbox. People take videos. People take pictures. So then there's another great theory that you might want to comment on. That is that they want there to be a slow time release of information. They want rumors. They want talk about this subject for some reason that fits their agenda. Otherwise, put it in the South Pacific and, you know, nobody
sees it. Well, there may be some other shortcomings of having it out in the middle of the ocean that, you know, that we're not thinking of. But
perhaps.
You know, I don't know. Maybe they need lots of supplies to get to deal with this thing, and
maybe
and
they
the
figured
equipment
if,
and,
maybe they figured if it crashed, it's going to be deep down under the Pacific somewhere potentially, and we'd lose it that way.
That's quite possible too.
The desert is good for one thing, isn't it? It's you know, it's just there, and it's fairly arid, and you'd definitely be coming down on land if you landed in a strange place.
Anywhere in Nevada, yeah.
Yeah. So you maybe your original point is actually the reason.
It could be.
That they wouldn't want to risk losing the one model they've got.
Yeah,
then you figure they're still working on trying desperately to back engineer this, or do you think by now they've done it?
It's been a long time.
It sure has.
I would hope they have made some substantial progress in 10 years. But, you know, if you don't have access to exotic materials,
then you're
what are
stuck.
You going to do?
No fuel, and that's
you know,
that.
It's like I said before, being you know back in the 1800s, and if you want to make something out of plastic, you know, all you can do is look at it and say, hey, this is really neat, but, you know, how do we make this stuff?
And, yeah. Hold on. Yeah. We're at the top of the hour. We'll be right back with Bob Lazar and you.
Can some